This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
So, 40 years of stopped images in 30 minutes, including 5 minutes of projections. This gives me 25 minutes, meaning hardly more than half a minute for a year, experience some way analogous to the accelerated visit of the Louvre in Jean-Luc Godard's Bande à part. But I thought that this could be tempted as a significant example of life work largely devoted to the stillness and movement issue. So you will forgive me to be both elliptic and too quickly assertive, as I will be going through 5 selected stages which have been progressive as well as have become concomitant. So first, film analysis. At the origin, from the mid-60s, I've been building, in a way, the progressive elaboration of an obsessive attention to film, which has been constantly managed till now, but under several forms. First, maybe you can't remember, but this was the very beginning, notes hysterically taken during the projection itself through more and more or less repeated visions of films in movie theaters. We didn't have anything else at the time. And for example, for The Birds of Hitchcock, my first detailed film analysis, for which I did not have the possibility to work on a film print, I had been able to count in the dark 71 or 72 shots of a film fragment, which amounted to 82, when a good luck allowed me to obtain from François Truffaut a final shot breakdown of the film, after which I worked to write my essay. So, during the 70s, more precise work has always been done from the film prints, with always this impression of a magic when one stops the image on the editing table. I remember invited in London at the Tsley School of the Arts when I could project for the audience on a big screen from a Steinbeck editing table equipped with a special mirror all the stopped images, 133 shots, of the plane sequence of North by Northwest. And then came, at the beginning of the 80s, with the arrival of the VCR and the commercial videotape, the first ideal instrument to stop films at home and to have a new familiarity with stopped images whenever you want. And then in the 90s came the DVD, which allowed a new jump, bringing the film closer, and even very much closer for the analytical commentary. For the first time, the possibility came to combine on the same machine, the computer, the film instantaneously stopped, and the process of writing, which extends according to the observations made through this constant stopping, and this is a real gem. So, second stage, film and photography. This was an exhibition in the film program I conceived with 2 people at the Centre National de la Photographie in 1984 with a catalogue called La Photo fait du cinéma, in which we have a questionnaire addressed to at least 20 people, among them Agnès Varda and Serge Danet, who tried to express what was the connection between photography and cinema. And I wrote for this catalogue one text, The Pensive Spectator. And as this notion has been extensively reworked by Laura Mulvey in her last book, Death 24 Times a Second, I will read as an homage to this beautiful book 2 quotations of my old essay that she has considered inspiring to build her own vision of the pensive spectator developed through the new technologies of the image. So here are some extracts of the text of 1984. What happens when the spectator of a film is confronted with a photograph? The photo becomes first one object among many. Like all other elements of the film, the photograph is caught up in the film's unfolding. Yet the presence of a photo on the screen gives rise to a very particular trouble. Without ceasing to advance its own rhythm, the film seems to freeze, to suspend itself, inspiring in the spectator a recoil from the image that goes hand in hand with a growing fascination, creating another distance, another time. The photo permits me to reflect on the cinema. And this, which goes from photography to the photogram and back to the photography, taking both of them in a sort of unified perspective. As soon as you stop the film, you begin to find time to add to the image. This is a direct reply to Roland Barthes' statement in Camera Lucida that in film, you have not the time to add to the image what you can do with the photograph. So you start to reflect differently on film, on cinema. You are led towards the photogram, which is itself a step further in the direction of the photograph. The photo thus becomes a stop within a stop, a freeze frame within a freeze frame, between it and the film from which it emerges. Two kinds of time blend together, always inextricable but becoming confused. In this, the photograph enjoys a privilege over all other effects that makes the spectator, this hurried spectator, a pensive one as well. Because further photography, there is a freeze frame, the real stopped image. As we see, for example, in the last shot of the 400 Blows of François Truffaut, showing Jean-Pierre Léaud suddenly freezed on as he runs to the sea, an instant violently insisted on by Serge Danet in our little catalogue of the time. And from this, I jump to an essay called L'Interruption L'Instant, The Film Stilled, 1986, published in English in Camera Obscura, where I developed the concept of the photographic to gather all the varieties of immobilization occurring through the moving image. For example, all the decomposition of the movement introduced by Godard since France Tour des Tours des Enfants, and their systematic organization in Every Man for Himself. I just want to underline one exemplary film which prefigures all possible links between photography and stopped images. La Macchina Ammazza Cattivi, The Machine to Kill Bad People, from Roberto Rossellini, 1948. In this film, to make a second photograph out of an already existing photograph freezes to death any movement of the subject represented in the exact position he had on the photograph. And the film goes killing people on photography all along. Third stage, Passage de l'Image, 1999. It was the first exhibition, I think, associating photography, cinema, video, computer images, and maybe the first great confrontation between cinema and contemporary art. We had in the show 16 photo, video, and film installations, a video program of 19 free tapes, a film program of 148 films of all sorts, durations, and times of cinema history, experimental as well as mainstream, all dealing with these passages between the media, and an anthology of 24 programs of scientific digital images. In what I have called the double helix of the image, two great categories of passages between the image may be distinguished, even if they have been working more or less together, creating a new time and space of the image. It is what I have tried to qualify through the words l'entre-image. First, the transformation of the analogical photographic image of film by the new technical means open, at this time mainly by the electronic image, but also by the already developing digital image, which is this image which has become today the common space of transformation of all the images, one into another. The second category concerns the tighter and tighter relations between images which move in film, in video, and those that do not move in photography and painting. And film and video tend to immobilize themselves, either in the treatment of the image, in freezing the subject matter, in decomposing it, or through the incorporating of the photography or the painting. In the 90s, it was striking that there were more and more photographic sequences in films and more films made by photographers. And in turn, photographers have searched to attract movement, to work it through serial images which approach film more and more. And those very years have been, largely in France at least, the great moment of the theoretical confrontation between cinema and painting in so many films, as well as in theory through many books and conferences. Fourth stage, states of the images, instant and interval. This is an exhibition I have curated with the Portuguese curator Sergio Ma at the Centre Culturel of Belém in 2005, and which was devoted mainly to the deepening of the second categories of transformation of the image. And here is part of the introductory statement that we made. One central question lies behind this exhibition's conceptual guideline, the photographic, and its unique ways of representing movement and time. The photographic category is not exclusive to photography or to its specific procedures. Rather, the photographic is a condition that appears in several genres and practices involving picturing, embracing painting, film, video, and photography, and more recently, new forms of digital imagery. Above all, it is connected to a visual field where the dominant actions involve stopping and expanding movement, as well as the effects that these experiments have in the perception of a peculiar, complex, open time that is imminent in the image. In this context, we should see instants as decisive moments, but also as pregnant places, intervals, creating a lasting link between the world of referential, visible, and concrete images and the world of mental, fleeting, and unpredictable images that photography, cinema, and video stimulate every time that they mobilize their capacity to alter movement and its time. Between the eye and the mind, between real and virtual experience, that is the shift that these states of the images bring about. I just give you quickly the list of the artists I can insist on. Well, it's starting with the artist who has pushed the most photography to the limits of movement, namely James Wall. The other one were David Clairbout, Chantal Ackerman, Dera Birnbaum, Michael Snow, Pedro Costa, Jean-Louis Boissier, Thierry Kunzel, James Coleman, Masaki Fujiyata, Shelley Silver, Yervan Janikian, and Angela Riki-Luki, whom Christa will evoke later. I will just insist on the significant examples of James Coleman and through later works, Thierry Kunzel and David Clairbout. So you have here a work by Coleman called Series of Images. It's a work of 75, which has been for him very important because it has been a sort of moment of passage between his first attempts and the long series of his all his works made out of slides, his slideshows, and this work has for him be a sort of enigmatic moment of reflection during a whole year. So he gives to it more importance in ways that it has as a work in itself, if we can say. So you see, even if it's not very easy to see, it's made out of silver paper. It's neither painting, neither photography. It's a very specific work in which you have two forms. Either you have a central form or two faces facing each other. And it changes in each image as long as you are passing through, which means that you have a sort of constant vacillation between recognizing either the central form or the two opposed faces. And it is the variation of this series of images which produces a sort of in-between movement and stillness, as through the effect of lighting, the spectator is really taken up to pass between these images and along them. In a way, this leads to the very heart of his oeuvre, and through being situated exactly between photography and cinema, this work and all the works of, largely all the works of Coleman, are for me very pure examples of the photographic. I will now come to two other examples, one of Thierry Kunzel and the other of David Clairbout, for more recent work which are very, very symptomatic. Well, the name of Thierry Kunzel is for me specifically important, not just because he has been one of my closest friends, but because before shifting to video art and conceptual art, he has been in France one of the main theoreticians of film analysis and of cinematic dispositif. And for example, he has conceived in 1973 in a text called Le Défilement, translated into English, Le Défilement, A View in Close-Up, an opposition very fundamental between what he called the film pellicule and film projection, film strip and projected film. And here it's the way it goes. The filmic, which will be the object of the filmic analysis, will be found neither on the side of motion nor on the side of stillness, but between them in the generation of the projected film by the film strip, in the negation of this film strip by the projected film. And it is exactly this in-between that we have been in common interested together, and that he has lately, after that, developed in all his video and conceptual world. It's interesting to remark that the filmic is the then partly erratic and utopical concept introduced the previous year, 1972, by Roland Barthes, in the same meaning, and which, in a way, so many works of our present time have filled with a new degree of reality. And video creation for Kunzel since the end of the 70s has become the treatment of this intermediary space between stillness and movement, as well as between figuration and defiguration. And from this common beginning, accompanying in my writing the development of this work has been one of the ways to deepen my concrete and conceptual approaches of these questions. Unfortunately, his last work in 2007, because he died too young, and which is, in a way, it's a film photo installation, if we can say, and for me, the ultimate consequence of the tension between the film strip and the film projection. And this thanks to a machine called the photomobile, which has been invented and which is capable to project at a very, very slow speed a 70 millimeter film, but devoid of any interval. The technical process in this installation is called la peau, the skin, and it appears like a sort of panorama of various human skins, which have been photographed by a microphotographic process, which have been treated by a computer so to form a continuous strip, finally printed on a 70 millimeter film. And so it's 5 meters of film for a duration of 45 minutes. And 80 images selected on 1,000 have been linked for the computer process so to form this extraordinary object. The installation implies, I can't show you all together because it's too complicated, implies the presence of the photomobile in the space with this very slow defiling, which makes that even if you look at it, you don't see it moving. So slow the film goes. 5 meters for 45 minutes of film. And it's frontal projection, even. So it's very hard to make a selection. I've selected 1 or 2 minutes inside of it. But it goes, you know, very slowly. The skins are changing of color because he has used very young people, old women, black skins, so that to make a sort of variation which makes this defiling of skins look like, as well, deserts or the face of the moon or, you know, wild landscapes and in a sort of general anonymity of human skin linked together. And in a movement, okay, which is slowly moving, but so slow that in a way it's like as if photography was moving itself. And it's really at the intermediary link between film and photography. Okay, so I will not take too much time with this because, you know, it's very hard to show in a public session because it's so long that it needs to be seen in silence and meditation and all along. But, you know, slowly you see the skin change and progressively it will change more and more and more and more. And this is supposed to be projected on a screen of 10 meters long, 5 meters high, suspended in the space. Other example, which is Claire Booth and Kunzel were in the show of Lisbon, which I mentioned, but those two works, which are more recent than the work which were used in the show. So this is one of the latest works of Claire Booth called Sections of a Happy Moment, and offers to the image a sort of line of flight through another combination between photography and cinema through the computer. The happy moment evoked in this work for nearly 26 minutes, image after image, shows for the most part a group of Chinese people playing ball in an open space next to a residential complex with a few other people walk by and linger momentarily. As usual in his practice, Claire Booth came across photographs in an archive that he found interesting. He went to the actual places, so to photograph himself this complex built in the 60s. Then he reworked these pictures via computer to bring them closer to their original model, but also to shape them to his liking. After that, he then photographed the actions and the poses of the 11 characters chosen in front of a blue background. To do so, he used 15 cameras simultaneously, each time concentrating on 1 or 2 people, and repeated the shots ad infinitum, so that around 16,000 shots were taken during each session. Thus, 4 sessions were needed to film, if we can say, sections of a happy moment, meaning that Claire Bout had to choose from more than 50,000 images before inserting the one he used into the selected background scenes of buildings, ending up with the 180 photos that we may call photos as shots, of which the video consists. So what you see, I've just shown a few images and we'll go in a little more. Does it move? Okay. This person that you see, for example, with his plastic bag, is in a way looking as he would be in a film. But it's not a film as the time doesn't pass. You just have one instant, which is a photographic instant, which is taken, for example, the ball never moves. It's always at the same height. And people playing ball are always in the same position in which they have been shot by the photographic process. So you have, in a way, photos, but which goes on and develop in time, as in film, but which are still images suspended in one virtual instant, which is always the same. And I think this work of Claire Bout is the emblematic example of the confusion between photography and film through digital processes of experience. And he has been so, in a way, fascinated by what he tried to do with this process that he has done two other works on the same model, including one which, instead of a ball, is using birds this time, and which takes us back to the chronophotography and the origin of cinema with Marais. So now I will have only a few words to conclude this two quick prospective retrospective. From the most recent works that I have experienced and tried to evaluate, as the two I just presented of Thierry Kunzel and David Claire Bout, I have got the feeling that there is no general theory possible of those effects of oppositions and more subtle overlappings between stillness and movement. They are just increasing the level of instability of the aesthetics of confusion in which it seems to me that we have entered since the multiplication of the new technologies of the image, with the electronic image and television, and mainly with the digital image and the computer and the internet. Confusion implying in my mind that in each singular case, we have to evaluate the singularity of the processes which are activated. They are all varied and all working in a way in the same direction. And the only way through which I may imagine a possible elaboration of these always striking effects of differentiation and overlapping between stillness and movement would be to know, if ever it becomes possible, what is happening at the level of vision and perception, or even at the level of the mental images which are such shaped, if it could be in any way expressed, even as an analogical suggestion, at the biological level of the neural activity of the brain. Thank you.
I try to, at the one hand, to give you a little idea about my questions concerning archival gestures, but linked to Raymond's talk, to the question of how cinema and media art articulate this relationship between stillness and movement, mainly analyzing or commenting on an installation by Yavan Chanikyan and Angela Ricciolucchi, which was part of the exhibition that Raymond has curated. What Hal Foster has called the archival impulse in contemporary art is being more and more intensively discussed by art critics and theorists, as well as within film studies. Hal Foster describes the nature of archival art mainly by discussing works by three contemporary artists, Thomas Hirschhorn, Tacita Dean, Sam Durant, but he also underlines that the general impulse is hardly new. He develops a line, for instance, from Russian constructivism to appropriation art, from Rodchenko to Rauschenberg to Richard Prince, the picture generation. There might be other lines, I think, linked to the archaeology of cinema itself, what I wanted to show in my book. As a gesture and artistic practice, material appropriation in cinema and in media art has often to do with questions of aesthetics and with the epistemic power of film. My study about secondhand cinema deals with form of contemporary archival art within the moving image. We can understand those decided gestures as performative acts of reading, reconfiguration, appropriation, or incorporation in the sense of Benjamin's Einverleibung. That means that the archival art films, this is an expression, a very interesting word that Sharon Sandusky, filmmaker and critic, created, be it archival art film, be it the avant-gardistic tradition of found footage or the essayistic form of compilation, or be it video more linked to conceptual art or collage and appropriation tradition, those artistic gestures always aim through repetition at a change, a form of rewriting, rearrangement, and so speak at the originality of a mediated form of seeing and or hearing. I will focus on the idea of analytical interruption, on the other hand, in the form of distinct stoppages of varying duration within a continuous space. So I take a very specific form of what stopping images mean that Raymond was talking about. A specific form of slowing down the filmic speed. And the link between freeze frame and step printing or slow motion might at first be seen as a paradoxical proposition. We can indeed distinguish, as Dominique Paigny, for instance, does, step printing as a kind of superexposition of movement, which gets dilated through duration, from the freeze frame as an aspiration towards a becoming photographic, which means the exact opposite of slowing down. Vivian's subject, too, opposes what she calls the revelation of the essence of movement in slow motion to movement cessation in the freeze frame. As we will see, we may nevertheless find something in between these two figures, something jerky or saccadic, an intermittent move which comes out from the very mechanics of cinema and confronts us with its dialectics between stillness and movement, continuity and discontinuity. And first, this question is linked to the technological setting and to the beginnings of cinema. As form of thought about what cinema is, it can also be seen as a poetical challenge through film history. And for good reasons, avant-garde cinema comes back to the works of Etienne Jules Marais or Eugene Muybridge to bring the question of the relation between stillness and motion in cinema back to its scientific origins. What I want to point out is the specific poetical potential of this figure in cinema as an epistemological as well as an emotional tool. Thus, cinema cannot only be seen as a time machine, but in the words of Jean Epstein, a theoretician and filmmaker from the 20s, as machine to think time. Jean Epstein describes cinema as a machine which is able to give a perspective to space and time. Slow motion and fast speed are, like the close-up, central figures in Epstein's theory. Epstein underlines the very fact that the cinematographic link between stillness and movement, discontinuity and continuity, brings along a radical form of perception, a transformation of perception. This idea is quite close to Walter Benjamin's statements about cinema's faculty to serve as an optical unconscious. Due to Benjamin, the most important camera's resources are interruption and isolation, extension and acceleration, enlargement and reduction. Quote, with a close-up, space expands. With slow motion, movement is extended. End of quote. In his lecture about some conditions of photogenie from 23, Jean Epstein defines the major quality of the latter as mobility through a time-space system. Quote, we can say, he writes, that the photogenic aspect of an object is a consequence of its variations in the space-time. End of quote. Photogenie, which is a central concept in Epstein's theories, photogenie implicates a specific mode of closeness and motion. Epstein's definition of photogenie is explicitly a cinematic one. Quote, only mobile aspects of the world, of things and souls, may see their moral value increased by filmic reproductions, end of quote. What the close-up provides, according to a later essay by Epstein, is a world of much more subtle mobility, he says, in 49, which leads directly to the universe of what he calls the infinitely mobile, infinitely slow of slow motion. So, for Epstein, the question of filmic scale is not only space-related, but also time-related. It comes out of movement. Slow motion and close-up are both a kind of expander. And you will understand when I show you some clips from the work by Yavan Tanikian and Angela Ricci, because they work with those idea of expanding, using what they call an analytical camera, a kind of optical printer, enabling them not only to film, or rather photograph, earlier film formats frame by frame, but also reframe this at will. Yavan Tanikian and Angela Ricci-Lucchi penetrate to the very heart of the photograms. This microscopic work involves interventions into the space and the time. They duplicate also, sometimes to slow down the photograms or the single frames. So they intervene in the space and time of the original material in rhythm and montage with irregular temporal prolongation, jumps, and detailed views achieved by shooting each frame separately, by brief static frames, or by undisguised fragmentation and impairments in the original material. I will mainly comment on an installation they did for the Venice Biennial in 2001, La Marcia dell'Uomo, The March of Men. Here you have a sketch that I will comment more precisely in a second. You see three screens, three projections in a room presenting material from 1895 by Etienne Jules Marais, from 1910, and from the 60s. The very title of the installation, The March of Men, seems to favor one of its three series of images from archival footage above the others. An ensemble of chronophotographic film strips that is presented here under the heading Homme Nègre Marche. Perhaps the original, one of the other titles was Enfant Africain Marchant de Voix Enfant Blanc. This is what I found in Michel Frisot's book about Etienne Jules Marais. Marais also worked with celluloid material to do some of his photographic series, chronophotographic series. The three-part projection, therefore, takes as its starting point a problem of photographic representation that can be considered not only in terms of perceptual theory and epistemology, but also of the history of technology. Employing the cinematographic technique of varying film speed to the point of bringing the film to an apparent standstill, Yavan Tanikian and Angela Ricci-Lucchi explore the phenomenon of the photographic snapshot as encountered at the end of the 19th century. According to Michel Friseau, this involves, on the one hand, the iconography of the pose, which has its origins in visual art, being replaced by a non-conventional, but for that a truer recording of the movement by the chronophotographic act, one that is paradoxically capable of capturing the gesture in a clearly defined manner, as if immobilized, says Friseau. And on the other hand, it represents a scientific tool with which to analyze a physiological question, making it possible to find new answers by breaking down a movement into a succession of distinct elements. In Étienne Jules Marais's Station Physiologique, ethnographers and natural scientists took sequential photographs of Africans who were brought in from the Universal Expositions and other similar venues. The shots were taken in analog fashion to those of Europeans, white men marching, according to a principle of equality derived from the scientific principle of comparison, namely in front of a light rather than dark background, but otherwise in the same staged setting. Men, women, and children stride past the camera at a suitable distance, it's almost the same distance, crossing its field of view. They all cover the same distance, measured by a chronometer that is occasionally visible in the picture. You saw one just when you see the women with the child. Each person's individual walking speed results in a different number of instant photographs. And if these images are animated, as you saw, the filmic shot has a correspondingly varied duration. The March of Men, in Janik and Richie Lucas's analytical treatment of the archival material, these single frames are animated to produce moving images. The use of freeze frames means that they nevertheless remain perceptible as an original sequence of still distinct elements. Increased modulation of the number of single frames duplicated for a freeze frame leads to a variability of the viewing experience, in particular through repetition. In this way, Janikian and Richie Lucchi present the black African children stepping out of line in longer still film images, as you see here, and you saw just a moment ago, and similarly emphasized through the enlargement of the image area a certain Bartesian punctum, because they do enlarge also. Incisive moment and touching details. By means of differentiated repetition, the March of Men accentuates gestures, procedures, and looks. This not only highlights the realm outside the current field of vision, it also creates an imaginary dimension that points beyond the referentiality of the depicted gesture. I show you again the sketch of the setting of the installation. The recycled chronophotographic film footage is presented as a loop on the first of three relatively large screens that have been installed close one behind the other. The other two series of images, also consisting of archival footage, are to be read in comparison with Marais' shots. The second and third screens involve equally images of Africa filmed by European travelers in search of a foreign experience. Like Marais' series, however, neither the expedition footage from 1910 nor the standard 8 private footage shot in 1960 is shown at a normal running speed. But Marais is a kind of formal relation or form to rework the other material. In the installation, they are subjected to the same analytical interruption in the form of distinct yet continuous stoppages of varying duration. The differentiated single framework of Janikian Richie Lucchi makes particular aspects stand out that would not be as visible if shown as a realistic projection speed. For the viewer, the film temporality is split. It oscillates between past recording. We know that it's archival material being shot 100 years ago, and present viewing. The result not only of being slowed down or brought to a standstill, but also of enlargement, color tinting, and repetition. Traces of decay in the original material become apparent. Its resolution and light and contrast display extreme heterogeneity. And I show you short clips from the second screen. So this comes from an archive. They had been working a lot. I was just showing an image that comes out from their Mayer film from the pole to the equator. They had been working on this archive by Luca Comerio, who was a cameraman who had filmed a lot of expeditions in the early tens and who had also done a compilation film himself in the 20s that they have reworked. And they have found this archive of Comerio and rework this nitrate material several times. So here you see this material reworked by Janik and Ricciolucci frame by frame, coming from an expedition of 1910. And you see that in the re-edited version of the early film material, the visit by safari hunters to a West African hut village shows itself to be asymmetrical circulation of attributes and attitudes. If, as would-be guests, the white visitors sit on the ground with the black people, the gesture exposed their attempt to disguise a feeling of being out of place. And if the colonized black people, as you see here, sit at a table wearing top hats and petticoats, their inappropriate dress reveals a game of subversion, one could say. At the end of this second sequence, a filmic configuration of the point of view is elaborated as a hierarchical relationship between safari hunt and trophy collecting, white and black, gesture of conquest and subjugation. And finally, the third image, which has been extremely alienated by means of deep violet color tinting, sexual difference as a component of post-colonial dispositive of power is emphasized by transforming a holiday film or an amateur film, or family film, from the era of masterism. It comes from 1960. A Westerner voyeur wearing dark glasses, and I show you the clip, to avoid being seen watching, looks on while half-naked black women dance around him for money. Here too, the gaze and gestures are dissected by freezing, enlarging, and repeating the shot. With their precise selection of film footage, Janikian and Ricciolucci at the same time propose an archaeological view of ethnographic film collections in the broadest sense, a new cartography of these human geographies. As far as the archaeological view is concerned, Janikian's rereading of the chronophotographic gate not only traces an iconographic or ethnographic path in all its ambivalent referentiality, but also the archaeology of a dispositif in which the images are inscribed. It is a well-known fact that in carrying out his physiological motion studies, Étienne Jules Marais was less interested in the illusion of reproduction than in the analysis of a process. As his assistant Lucien Bull reports, Marais believed that, quote, the projection did not allow him to discover more than the attentive analysis of a print. Marais wasn't interested at all in the illusion of a film projection. In the context of this installation, Marais' paradoxical material is treated entirely in the sense of his own invention. In other words, not with the illusionistic logic of the Lumière cinematograph, but rather in a very specific mode of visibility between immobility and variable mobility. a specific mode of visibility that is closer to pre-cinematographic viewing possibilities, such as the zoetrope, for instance, where you could really vary the speed of seeing, bringing down, stopping, and moving again. It becomes apparent that this experimental arrangement is based upon a scientific view that regards the physiological nature of the human gait as paradigmatic for the progression of the mechanism of the apparatus, following a pattern of displacement, standstill, displacement, standstill. Chanikyan's approach is also archaeological in the sense that it is interested in the body and the circulation of films within and beyond the archives, not simply in terms of their representative content. In line with Foucault, one could say, particularly with regard to the two other films that make up the installation, the expedition film of 1910 and the private film material from the 60s, that in the reuse of the material, a stagnating language serves as a basis of a circulating language, one which also takes into account the possible field of the film's original use. It's a kind of critical archaeological investigation of the dispositif of the making of these films. The progressive arrangement of three screenplays is not and are not insignificant part in this. It should be understood not only as a chronological arrangement, 1895, 1910, and 1960, but also and above all as an epistemological comparison of different functions of photographic and filmic recordings of the other, one could say. Between Marais' analysis of physiological difference between white and black people, the gesture of colonial exoticism from the Comerio collection, the material of 1910, and the attitude of the private filmmaker as that of a post-colonial consumption-oriented mass tourist, lies the various life worlds and experimental horizons of Western thinking that determine the figuration of black African gestures and locomotion respectively. So I come to conclusion. The March of Man deals with a deterioration of specific forms of perceiving the world, organizing expeditions of discovery and setting up archives. This is in line with the current tendency to criticize the standardizing representation of the history of mankind in a Hegelian tradition and to seriously question the definition of identity from a Western perspective. Of course, the history of ethnography, even in the broadest sense, as the participatory and reflexive observation of a culture, can by no means be regarded as homogeneous. Its ambiguity is underlined by cultural theorists, for instance, James Clifford. I quote, "Ethnography, a hybrid activity, thus appears as writing, as collecting, as modernist collage, as imperial power, as subversive critique," end of quote. Chanikya and Ricci-Lucchi take precisely this ambiguity and this idea of collage into account when creating new links between all kinds of ethnographic traces. This cartography of photographic and filmic gestures considers its own variability in terms of the form of modulation and consequently avoids manichaeistic presentation of ethnographic, photographic, cinematographic positions. Thank you for your attention.